This is Omar Musni with UN News. Financial rescue packages offered by the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, to countries facing economic meltdown should place less emphasis on cutbacks in future, in recognition that the fund has gone too far with austerity, a UN Special Rapporteur has said. Philip Alston, UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, has been speaking after presenting his report on the IMF, as well as the United States and Ghana, to the Human Rights Council in Geneva. Professor Alston explained his key findings to Daniel Johnson.
The challenge for the IMF is to combine its various recommendations for what they would call fiscal prudence, which basically could be translated as austerity or cutting back on deficits and so on, to combine that with policies that will protect the most vulnerable people in the society, because normally when governments cut back on their expenditure, if they have to reduce their overall expenditure by 2, 3, 4%, the people who are going to feel it most are those who are relying on sort of minimal government services. And so the challenge for the IMF is to make sure that it can both promote more fiscal prudence, but at the same time protect money for social purposes.
But if I might just jump in there, in your report that you presented to the Human Rights Council, you detailed the economic, not political, motivations of the IMF. And you said that though there was some flexibility, the IMF wasn't particularly minded to ensure that there was a social safety net. It was more interested in ensuring that international exchange rates for things like the peso were guaranteed, that there was no actual guarantee that the very poorest, or even not the very poorest, but those who actually needed help, were going to get it from the IMF.
I think the big change is encapsulated in a bizarre word that the fund uses itself, which is macro-criticality. What that means is that they now think that there are a number of factors which actually influence macroeconomic outcomes, which are not purely economic. So in other words, if you can protect the poorest and the most vulnerable, that will have some impact on the macroeconomic situation in a range of ways. First of all, you head off riots and demonstrations, which can make any package fail. Secondly, if you can protect the health and well-being and the capacity of poor people to contribute to the economy, that too is an important positive factor. So they are starting to see that in the overall, even economic equation, there are benefits to addressing these social issues.
And those are linked to the managing director of the IMF, Christine Lagarde. She assumed office a few years ago. She said that there was going to be more of a focus on social protection, on things like climate change as well. But what you're suggesting is that the IMF has not sufficiently in the past tried to ensure that the poorest of the poor are getting the help they need. So there's increased discontent, there are increased riots around the world, and the IMF is to some extent responsible for this because of its policies.
Well, I think some old-time IMF officials would think that there is a single matrix that must be applied and they have absolutely no choice. But of course, that's never true. There's a range of different recipes that could be used in order to cook the same dish. And what the IMF needs to do, instead of saying, okay, big time austerity, you've got to cut, 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 and then eventually you will be in reasonable health and growth can take off from there. Instead, the approach is, okay, there's got to be some careful pruning that takes place in order to cut back, but we've also got to protect certain areas, both because it's humane and socially necessary, but also because it will be economically more productive. The fund itself has recognized that it's gone too far with austerity and so on in the past. I think that one of the big challenges for the IMF is that it has an unduly homogeneous staff composition.
It's got 2,500 staff, you say, and most of them come from top universities. There's a lack of global distribution. They mainly come from rich Western countries. Yes,
right.
I get that. But what is the benefit of you representing the Human Rights Council, one big international organization, taking on another one?
Well, my report is certainly critical, but I think it's actually constructive. And I do think that it coincides with serious efforts within the IMF to bring about change. They're interested in succeeding. They're not interested in continuing to have all these riots, continuing to have the pushback, the bad reputation, and to be promoting conditions in which populism does flourish. I think they would like to find a new recipe. And I think by providing some sort of external impetus to devote more attention to the search for social protection measures, that it can actually work.
Okay, I understand that the IMF wants to change direction, but it is not the authority in a country. Yes, it has the keys to the purse, if you like, but it can't ensure that a country spends X amount on social welfare. What you're calling for, however, is more regulation. You're calling for more bureaucratic, time-consuming investigation. I mean, we just haven't got that kind of time to help people who need it now.
Okay, that's a very good response. You really sound like some IMF officials with whom I've discussed these matters. First of all, there's always ambivalence because on the one hand, the fund knows and behaves as though it has the final word on a lot of these things within a country. But of course, countries will reject that and say, no, we are sovereign, we make the decisions, it's not you. But at the end of the day, if the package is not signed off on by the fund, there's big trouble. The question then indeed is, should the fund restrict itself to a very narrow range of issues in relation to which it's going to lay down hard terms, hard conditions? And they would say, if we're then going to be looking at social protection, that's a microeconomic area, it's complicated, we don't have the expertise. I think my answer to that is, yes, by all means, work with other organizations like the World Bank, with whom they're very close, who certainly does have the expertise. But it's not persuasive to say that we really are able to set absolutely hard targets in terms of certain macroeconomic goals. When it comes to social protection, we'll leave that completely open-ended. There's a middle course where guidance can be given, where they can persuade the country concerned that for political reasons and for economic reasons, you, the government, will be much better off to do it this way.
Now, can we just move on very quickly? I know you haven't got much time. The United States and Ghana, you reported on these countries. On the United States, you mentioned that 40 million people are in poverty, 18 million in extreme poverty. You also mentioned there's a disconnect between the understanding of what a person on a low income needs in the United States, given that those getting healthcare from the state are actually either in full-time work or in study or looking after somebody.
I think what's important is not to think that people who are receiving government benefits are necessarily homebound or bedbound even. In other words, there's an awful lot of people who are very economically active, but who still absolutely depend on government benefits, whether it's Medicaid in terms of health insurance, whether it's food stamps or housing subsidies. Interestingly enough, apart from the fact that there are something like 1.5 million veterans who are on food stamps, there are also tens of thousands of serving military families who are on food stamps. In other words, the salary that they get is not sufficient for the family to survive, and they qualify under the criteria for food stamps.
So you're seeing basically an increasing gap between rich and poor. We're going to have to move very quickly on to Ghana. I'm sorry, I know you have to go. You say that Ghana, which is the darling of the financial community, the international financial funds that love to invest, well, it only spends 50% less than its peers do on social protection. One in eight people in extreme poverty there, one in five in poverty. How is the country going to turn this around? Does the country want to turn this around? Are they listening to what your recommendations are?
The rhetoric of government is pro-poor. They will insist that they really want to do this, but that it will happen through increased economic growth. My argument is simply that this never happens automatically, that they need to develop some of the very good programs that they already have, but which are really heavily underfunded, and they need to crack down on corruption, to collect taxes more efficiently, and that would easily give them enough money. And they don't need a lot. We might be talking about 1%, 2% of GDP where they could provide really meaningful social protection and eliminate much of their poverty. So Ghana could actually be not only a superstar in terms of growth, but a superstar in terms of its social protection policies.